Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Offer valid on standard browsers, U.S. only.
When I heard about Date My Age, I thought, really? But there I was in my empty, quiet house, my laptop on the kitchen counter, and I typed in my name. Looking for a man between the ages of 40 to 60? Sure, why not?
Date My Age is different. With verified profiles, you can feel safe and secure to explore meaningful connections with interesting and mature singles.
Date My Age made it really easy. I could join and view online profiles for free. All of a sudden, my empty house wasn't so quiet anymore. I got so much attention, it just made me feel seen and alive. Date My Age helped me start a totally new chapter in my life.
Find a friend, a lover, a partner at Date My Age. Get 60% off when you join at datemyage.com today. That's datemyage.com to connect with thousands of singles worldwide. datemyage.com.
That's a gay ass podcast.
What? That's a gay ass podcast.
A what?
A really, really, really gay podcast that we call That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
That's a gay ass name for a gay ass podcast.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, Eric Williams, and this week we have Karin Soni on the podcast, who straight people know from the Deadpool films, and I know him from falling in love in a movie with my future second husband, Jonathan Groff. The movie is called A Nice Indian Boy. It is so fucking good. He is also in one of my favorite shows, Nobody Wants This, which is beautiful because Karin grew up obsessed with the OC. And so, yes, I ask about what it was like working with the Seth Cohen. At the end of the episode, Karin also gives us some character actress tea from working with one of the most beloved character actresses before she had a much-deserved renaissance. Enjoy this interview with Karin Soni. Karin Soni is on That's a Gay Ass Podcast, and while we have a lot to discuss, I want to ask you my first hard-hitting question. Karin, we're recording this on a Monday afternoon. Did you have a gay-ass weekend, or was it boring and straight?
I did have a gay-ass weekend in that last night I hung out with some gays. Actually, I hung out with gays. I went for a picnic that was 40% gay, 60% straight women. So that feels pretty.
How did you feel about that? 60% straight women, 40% gay. Was the conversation purely pop culture character actress, or did any gays have any horny talks about their fucking?
There was very little horny talk. There was a lot of talk because one of the women was getting married. So there was a lot of talk of straight male hygiene. Then there were some videos of said bachelor at his bachelor party in Austin. And so I think some of the gays got a little horny for like the straight men drinking and partying and the lines being blurred. And then last night, rife with tension,
that conversation. I mean,
yes, exactly.
Go on. Last night, what happened?
Last night, we had my partner and I went on a double date with a gay couple. So that was very gay. In Silver Lake. And it felt like 80% of the people out last night in Silver Lake were gay. So there was that happening as well.
And I was not far from you. I was in Echo Park doing the gay party hot dog. Have you been?
Yes, we drove past it last night. So
I was there.
We saw there was a lot happening. Maybe you do know one of my friends. I think he's been on your show, Ryan O'Connell.
Oh my God, of course.
Yeah, so it was dinner with Ryan and his partner, Jonathan. So
Jonathan, oh my God, that's so, look at us gay girlies in Los Angeles. My follow-up question as a hard-hitting gay journalist is, have you ever, if we're going into the straight men conversation, have you ever found yourself fantasizing about what it would be like to turn a straight guy, or has it never been your drink of choice?
I mean, yes, absolutely. When I was much younger, thankfully, I feel like if I was still doing that, probably more therapy is needed.
That's the truth. That's the truth. Because sometimes when I, no judgment slash a little judgment, when I come across an adult gay, 30s yes, and older, exactly, and they still want to turn straight, I say, we need a doctor. Doctor, doctor, tell me the news.
Exactly. Something feels not great about that. Yes. Many of my initial crushes, I grew up in India, so there was no gay people out in Delhi when I was there. And so everyone was straight, but, you know, the fantasies were going wild in my head. I was straight as well. So
as we all were.
Could be, yeah, any lingering look, I could write a novella on what the lingering look.
Yeah, you
look
immediately
was.
Turn into a lesbian writer. Exactly. Yeah, I wasn't in Delhi, but I was at the St. Louis, Missouri Galleria Mall, and to me that felt very similar to Delhi, yeah, to the streets of Delhi, because the straight men with their girlfriends and wives, and yeah, that 1 minute of eye contact, I just, of course, wanted to run to the bathroom and see if they would follow me, but that never happened.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is now that we're talking about it, my partner is gay as well, thank God. But he is also a doctor, and he practices in Boston. And when he first came out, he would fire up the Grindr, and it would light up, and it was all DL straight married doctors.
In Boston?
In Boston at the time, yeah, in 2014, 15, maybe something like that.
Which is not that long ago.
So, you know, I guess it depends on location, because I guess certain places, the fantasy is more real. But
well, now I'm embarrassed to admit that closeted doctors in Boston do make me soaking wet.
Yeah, there you go.
Isn't it like a man in uniform type thing? When you see the surgeon's cap, you immediately think like, what, how can I pull the strings? Yeah. And
Shonda Rhimes has fucked all of us up. And
Shonda Rhimes really made us all. Well, I mean, also Noah Wiley, I think, has done the same.
Correct.
Okay, this is going to be a controversial question. Would you say that Noah Wiley is the straight version of Jonathan Groff?
What makes you make that? I'm not seeing the connection. I'm curious.
Here's my connection. Here's my argument. If I had a PowerPoint. Okay. Slide number one. Mm-hmm. Noah Wiley and Jonathan Groff both project a beautiful vulnerability in their works, their work.
Okay.
They're both clearly strong people, but they're not afraid to cry. Slide two.
Okay.
They both have a beautiful good looks, but they're not unapproachable at a party.
Correct. Okay.
Slide three. I want to suck both of their dicks.
Okay. Okay. You know, I'm seeing a lot more of the connection than I saw.
I didn't think it through too hard, but when you made me pull up receipts, I panicked, Karin. I panicked.
You know, where I was stumbling was, I guess when I think Jonathan, I think singing a lot. Does Noah sing? I don't know.
I want to be
first thing I'm thinking of when I think of him, but maybe I'm wrong. You know, maybe
who's
I'm
the straight
not
version of Jonathan Groff to you? Do you have any theories? Maybe there just isn't anyone because Jonathan is a unicorn.
That's true. It's hard. I think that's where we're stumbling. Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
listen, we're obviously bringing up Jonathan because of the film that not only are you and Jonathan beautiful romantic partner lovers in the movie A Nice Indian Boy, but also your partner directed this film.
Correct.
So can we talk about the fact that you are with a man who is both practicing medicine and Hollywood? What gives him the fucking right?
Yes. And what's crazy is now he's entered a third career path, which is he just sold his first novel to Simon & Schuster. So, you know, it's just, I guess I should just give up at this point. He's doing way too many things. And he directed this movie. And it was this interesting thing where we were trying to get this movie made for a while. It's hard to get gay things made, spoiler alert. So it took a few years. And in that time, we never thought about what it would actually be like to film this movie, which I fall in love, propose, marry, have sex with another person, another man. all in front of him watching and directing it. And people would sometimes ask the question, but it was so far from being real, the movie, that I think either of us were like, we'll get to it when we get to it. And then we got to it. And we were like, this could get a little weird. And then it was luckily Jonathan, and none of it felt weird because Jonathan is the easiest person to get along with. And my favorite and funniest memory is shooting the sex scene, because Jonathan was very excited to shoot the sex scene because, no surprise here, he loves shooting sex scenes, and he fell in love with them during Looking. And we had an amazing intimacy coordinator. But Jonathan taught all of us something that day when we were rehearsing the scene, because he had all these ideas, and, you know, a bunch of it got cut for the final cut. But there was a lot of stuff that was in there. And I saw everyone, like, including my partner and I, being like, I guess we'll try that later this weekend, because he knows what he's doing. And so that part ended up being not awkward at all, but informational and educational.
Give us one lesson that he taught you.
You know, it's just like simple film things of like what looks good, how you want to show certain stuff, what angles, if the camera is a certain way, where the head should be. And then straight up comfort. He would hide pillows and do things and so that everyone felt comfortable. And, you know,
he's a master of his craft on film and off camera. And that just confirms my theory, because I don't want to make it weird, because you've literally worked with this man and you know him. But I imagine one day I'll be hopefully blessed enough to meet him. And I will tell him to his face that I have had such a talent and just human crush on him since Spring Awakening. And I just, you know, it's you hear so many people say how good of a person he is, plus his talent level, plus how fucking beautiful he is. It's like, it's any Jonathan Groff story. I'm grateful to hearing.
I will say that, you know, when sometimes when you're working in film and TV, you tell people like, oh, you're a fan of this person, maybe don't go up to them at Starbucks, because it just might not go well. And it's not their fault. You know, they're just private or whatever.
Right.
If you most likely, I would say, if you go up to Jonathan, you'll have a good experience. Not that everyone should attack him at Starbucks.
Well, but I hate to tell you, even if you told me not to say anything, I would not respect that boundary. Exactly. And I love a boundary. I mean, there's something about this movie that, speaking of boundaries, is so, I just need to butter your biscuit and tell you that I was triggered in the best ways watching this film. If anybody has not watched this movie and you're listening, it's basically about two different worlds coming together in a marriage. And I, as a Jew married to a Catholic from Georgia, was very confronted with so many parts of our courtship. And I even have like a list of similarities between Indian and Jewish families that I jotted down.
I mean, see that all the time.
Oh my God. Oh, the invasive questions at dinner.
The mom.
The no boundaries between a mother and a gay son. Yeah. Yep. But before we get into the specifics of this film that I would love to chat about, I do want to ask you the famous podcast question to get into your her story. So, Karin Soni, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
It's the television show, The OC. specifically, Ben McKenzie, the character Ryan Atwood.
Of course. It sort of tracks that you cast Jonathan Groff, because there's a bit of like a archetypical similarity, I would say, between those two.
I can see that. Yeah. That show was huge for me. I was in high school in India, and it's the reason I applied to college in California and ended up coming out here, because I had never been to California, but the version of California on that show is what I fell in love with. And then specifically Ryan, and then everyone called me the Indian Seth Cohen, the Adam Brody character, because he was had like the curly hair and everything, and he was like the cool kind of nerd. Like, I wasn't into sports and stuff, but there I was just like, okay, and he's a little queer, I feel like, that character. And
well, all cute nerdy Jewish boys are slightly gay.
And that's where I learned all about the Jewish culture in many ways, because in India, I wasn't interacting. Yes, the bagel cutter machine thing. And I was like, what are they doing with that? And then I became fascinated. I was like, I must have a bagel. And I did. I've had many. And then Sandy Cohen, that dad. Oh, my God. Incredible.
Oh, iconic. Yeah. Peter.
Then, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, maybe he birthed my daddy issues.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
He's also in the very important film Center Stage, which sort of created the gay person that sits before you.
Yeah, he's iconic. But that show was a big... So I was aggressively unpopular in school. I was very bullied. And then I became popular overnight because I did a play, which never happened. But I did a play that was a comedy. I did not act before this play. I just did it because I got cast in it. Long story. But I didn't even know it was a comedy. So I just played everything kind of straight. And then it got laughs because the writing was good, I guess. And then all the my bullies' girlfriends were in the play with me, because they all wanted to go to Bollywood and become actresses. And so their boyfriends came to support it. After this play, I mean, I was aggressively bullied by these people. Afterwards, they were like, you're cool. And so one of the things they did that summer, because they thought I was funny, and I was like, oh my God, these are not my words, but I'll just fake it till I make it. And then that summer, they handed me the DVD box set for season one of The OC, because it didn't air on TV in India. And I became obsessed. And, you know, Ryan is in The Wife Beater. I'm like, I'm Adam Brody, Ryan, and Seth fan fiction. Like, that's, yeah, I'm like, they're in love with each other. Something is happening here.
Oh, my God.
And then
God.
There was, like, a straight guy in my high school who was kind of like the Ryan Atwood character. So then, and then he was the leader of the popular kids. And then he kind of used to hang out with me solo a lot over the summer. And I was like, something is happening. Nothing happened. But that show became my religion in many ways. And then eventually I applied to college and everything. But then flash forward to I showed up at USC for school. And my sophomore, maybe junior year, I was in a TV class. And there used to be this TV class in USC called TV Symposium. And they would bring a TV show that was on the air. They would see an episode. They'd describe, like, this is a police procedural. And you would understand, like, what makes it different from other things. And then the creators and sometimes the cast of the show would come and you could ask them questions and everything. And you would get the email before, like, oh, here's the thing so you can study these people's bios. And it was Ben McKenzie. He was coming to the class and he was on the show called Southland, which was a TNT cop drama. And that was they were screening. And I started freaking out because by then I'd been in LA for 2 years and I'm like, celebrity what? Like, I'm part of this. Like, I just was like, I've seen a few people at the Beverly Center. Like, I feel good. Like, I'm not starstruck anymore. And I was kind of playing it cool. And then I saw his name in that email and I went right back to being 14 years old and freaking out. So then cut to, he arrives at this class and I'd been in this class for like a few weeks. So I knew like what it was. So I got there early. I sat right in the front. It was a very big class. And he was right in front of me and I had this condition when I'm nervous called hyperhidrosis where I get very sweaty palms. And I was just flooded in my palms. And this is part of the story. I'm like rubbing it on my jeans, trying to be like, get it. Like, it's just stains everywhere. It's really bad. And then I was like, you know what? I feel good. Like, I stared at him directly for 40 minutes without like breaking eye contact. And the entire time in the Q&A portion, he was talking about how he took this show because he wants to shed the image of the OC of like being the bad boy high school guy. And he wanted to like be taken seriously. All I'm thinking about is the OC. And then the Q&A part ends and all these like sorority girls are rushing to go meet him. And he's, I'm sure, happy to meet these sorority girls. And I turn around and I'm like, I'm good. I don't need to say hi. I don't need to do anything. Like, I'm cool. Like, this was a good for a full circle moment. But then halfway through exiting the classroom, I'm like, no, I must shake his hand. So I pivot and I turn around and I run back. And I remember he was talking to this beautiful blonde sorority girl and I physically moved her aside. Some might say shoved. And you know, when you're just like, something has just clicked and you're like, I'm determined. Now I'm determined. And yeah, I'm like, I must. Moment. And he was kind of like, whoa. And then I just put my hand out and it was full of sweat.
Soaking wet. 200 degree. Yeah,
exactly. He starts shaking it. I see him wince at the wetness of the hand. And I just made direct eye contact and I said, the OC changed my life. And then he had just talked for 45 minutes about how he does not want to talk about the OC. And then he was like, uh-huh. And then he was like, that's great. And then I didn't get the response I wanted. So I kept shaking his hand. And I was like, you don't understand. I'm here because of the show. And then he was like, oh, okay. And he was like, are you happy here? And I was like, yes, thank you. And then I just walked off. And then immediately I was like, that was bad. Like, I just knew it was bad. It had gone bad. And so that's my,
all these years later, do you still think it went bad?
Well, a few years later, I met him again at a urinal,
at a urinal,
at a movie premiere for a movie I was in and his wife was in. And he came to support his wife.
Wait, who's his wife?
Morena Baccarin.
God bless.
Yeah, she's amazing. And she's in the Deadpool movie. So we were at the premiere for Deadpool 2 and in New York. And I went to the bathroom before the movie started. And he was in the urinal. He arrived, I think, after me at the urinal next to me. And then he turned over and he was like, "I'm a big fan of your work," or whatever. And
You're kidding me.
No. And I just played it completely cool. And I was like, And then I was like, "Sorry, I gotta go. And then I just, I did the opposite, where I was indifferent and almost rude. I was almost rude. So,
well, guess who got the last laugh?
Yeah. Clearly, your audience, because the story is a disaster.
I mean, there's so much there that's delicious to unpack, because you know what really strikes me is that you turned back around while you were about to leave that class. Don't you think that was like one of the first opportunities for you moving to the U.S., going to USC, where you're like, you know what, I'm going to take fucking control of my destiny. Yeah. And I feel like that's what like a lot of us have to do as adults is like, because what the version of you that would have kept walking was the polite high school student who doesn't want to make a wave. And you said, no, I'm going to shake this star's hand with my nasty ass wet palm.
Correct.
Because I deserve to take up some fucking space.
And I'm going to bring up the thing he doesn't want to talk about, because guess what? It means something to me.
And you know what?
These are the consequences for the art you've created. I'm here now.
If you are a part of a culture-making show, or it's just like, if I may make the gayest reference of the day, it's like Betty Buckley being asked to sing Memory from Cats. I don't think she is going to be bristling at the thought, not to make a cat reference, but I don't think she's bristling at the question to sing Memory, just like he should not bristle at a gay guy from India salivating over the OC. Correct. Because listen, the OC was big for me in different ways. The first time I ate pop brownies, I was doing the national tour of a children's musical, and I made the brownies and brought them, and then we ate them, put the OC on. We didn't think that the brownies were working, so we ate more.
Oh no.
And as the OC played, we all started to get ill, and a girl turned fully green, puking all night, and then they thought I laced it. Anywho, enough about me. the OC has a lot of prevalence in your life as well, because you did an episode of Nobody Wants This, which, speaking of Jewish Correct. Programming. Correct. Huge.
And
huge
I was in a scene with Mr. Adam Brody himself.
Caption on Instagram says, "Happy to report I played it cool around Adam, even though I insisted people call me the Indian Seth Cohen in high school." And I'll recap the plot of the OC to anyone who will listen.
I will. I played it cool. I really played it cool. I did.
How did it feel to be with Seth Cohen himself?
I was freaking the fuck out. It was crazy. It was very crazy. So I'm friends with the lovely Kristen Bell. We had done a movie together, and I knew she was doing the show because I don't care about my mental health, I do read the trades. So I was aware that the show existed. And did I fantasize that I would randomly be asked to be on the show? Yes, didn't think it would ever happen. And then I was actually at South by Southwest for the premiere of A Nice Indian Boy, and I get a text from Kristen being like, "Hey, would you want to come do a day on my show?" Just kind of being like, as a favor, like, "You probably don't want to do this." And I was like, yeah. And then I was like, "Well, you know, it's probably a scene with her. Who knows? I know nothing about the show. It hadn't come out yet, obviously." And then I get the script, and it was with her and Adam. And
chills.
Yep. I had a week to process, like, do I bring it up? Do I not bring it up? What do I do? What do I do? And then I was like, you know what? It's a day. I'm not gonna bother him. I'm not gonna bring it up. Because the other thing was, I don't know if you know this, but they did an OC rewatch podcast, which was called Welcome to the OC, Bitch.
Yes.
And I listened to every episode, and Adam, you know, was on there eventually, but it took a while to get him on because I think, like many people, he didn't want to just constantly have to talk about the show. So I was like, it's a day, I'm not going to bring it up. But there was a day halfway through when we were filming where we were, trailers were somewhere and the location was somewhere else. And so we were in a van together going from the trailers to the locations, and it was just me and him. And I had made him laugh or something from some improv, like, prior to lunch. So he was, like, talking to me and, like, was interested, clearly, and, like, getting to know me and asking me where I grew up and everything and what brought me to L.A. And then I was like, this, he's just setting me up. And he's, like, setting it up. And then I didn't say it. Because I was just like...
let me ask you a quick question. What the fuck is wrong with you?
You know, there was just this moment where I was like, is it time to move on from this and just let that chapter be closed? No, if I was there for more than a day,
I see.
Second day, I would have done it. There was just something where I was like, this is going really well. Let's just let it be. Why, like, change this?
You're more emotionally evolved than I am, because I have no sense of, like, the long game or, again, boundaries. And you actually listened to your gut, which was like, if this was more than one day. But it sounded like I get it. You wanted him to remember you as Karin Soni, the actor who had a great improv.
Just like a mysterious, where did this person come from? What is he doing next? Like, what's happening?
But and if not I give that up he too brought much, up yes, the OC.
Exactly. Yeah. And that I was freaking out my entire personality is the OC. We don't need to bring that up.
I respect your game. I really do. Yeah. I mean,
well, I've had some disasters. I did a show with Daniel Radcliffe, and the first season when we did that, I mean, Harry Potter was another huge, the books were like a huge thing, the movies, all of it. And so I was freaking out about that in a major way, because that was in my life much after the OC, because there were a lot of movies and I was always watching them and all that stuff. And I remember I had to do an audition with Daniel. And again, I was like 27 years old and I'm like, I've been around the block. Like, I don't get starstruck. And I just saw him as I was walking into the audition room, and I was just like back to being a child and was freaking out. So then I got the job and I was like, how am I going to process working with this person? And so I decided it's too weird if I start getting into this. I don't want to freak him out. So I did the crazy thing of saying, pretending like I didn't even know what Harry Potter was, that it even existed on this planet. So we were at a table read for the first season, and, you know, I'm just playing it cool. Like, people are referencing it like lightly, and I'm just completely ignoring that I know what it is. And then someone just says, oh, so-and-so, this crew member is going to be on the show. And then Daniel's like, oh yeah, they worked on Potter. And we're in the circle of people. And I go, what's that?
No, you did not do that.
And then there was a very awkward silence.
What's the Bible?
Yes. And then Daniel explained to me what Potter is and explained that it was a movies that he was in. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I was like, I have 3 months with this person and I'm going to continue this lie that I have lived on the planet not knowing what
Harry
Potter is.
Wait, can we get that movie? I want the movie where you're trapped in the lie that you've never heard of Harry Potter. Daniel Radcliffe plays himself in this movie.
Exactly. And is constantly having to explain to me everything that happens. No, then the first or second day of filming, I came out to him as a fan of Harry Potter. And he was very sweet. And he was like, yeah, I figured you knew what it was.
But you know what? You have this like run of like really lovely, from what I have heard, really lovely and very famous co-stars. I've heard, obviously, Jonathan Groff is a peach. I know that Daniel Radcliffe is like just a workhorse, like great guy. Adam Brody, I'm sure he's lovely.
Very lovely.
Okay, God bless. And so you kind of, it's kind of a fun problem to have, which is that you are getting cast in these like high profile things with famous people that you have to figure out how to be cool around.
I know. It's a good
problem.
May we
all have this gorgeous problem to have.
Yeah.
I feel so lucky that you're on this podcast, because it's rare that I get to talk to somebody who has such a cool career that is full of these big commercial successes, but also there's a movie like A Nice Indian Boy that's like a total queer love story.
Yeah.
And if I may, I want to ask a couple questions about this film because of all the ways that it resonated with me. One of the quotes towards the beginning of the film is your hilarious friend Peter Kim, I believe,
correct,
is the actor's name, who I love.
So good.
He has a quote that says, anxious people are the best in bed because they try harder.
Yes, this is
improvised. Do you think that's true or false?
Improvised by Peter.
God bless Peter.
He took it very personally, and I could see into his eyes that he was speaking a truth. So I'm going to say it's true. I think they, I would say they are probably better. I don't know if they themselves are having as much fun because they're so concerned about the other person. So it depends. You know, I don't know if they are having a good time, but you might have a good time with them.
Okay, this is so funny you say that because I just went to a taping of my dear friend's comedy special. His name is Zach Noe Towers, brilliant comedian. And he has a joke. I won't give it all away for, you know, to protect his special, but he makes a joke about hooking up with fours. And how great they are in the sack, I guess, because they're trying to prove something. And so it might be similar to anxious people where they're really just trying to get the job done well. And so maybe they're enjoying it less. But we, the person receiving the anxious tongue.
It's being taken very well care of.
Exactly.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
What about when it comes to your actual upbringing, if you are this closeted gay person growing up in India, you move to LA for USC. A lot of the themes in this movie are about sort of hiding your gay life with your Indian family. And I think that a lot of us deal with that, as you know, I coming from a Jewish family, but also just like I'm from the Midwest, I'm from Missouri, where I very much felt that for a moment. Did you have to deal with that with your family in terms of like at first getting them acclimated to like the gay part of your life?
Oh yeah, for sure. What I loved about the movie was that it's not a coming out story, so that part sort of already happened, but it was handling the next part of coming out, because I don't know how it was for you, but in my head, when I was closeted, when I knew I was gay when I was 14 and I came out when I was 19, so for those 5 years, I was like, the minute I say these words out loud, it'll be like a spell and everything will be fine and it'll all be good. But it wasn't that. It was the first step of many steps of coming out in that journey. And so I love that the movie was dealing with that, of sort of what happens next. And one of the big things that's coming out, I think, is not only introducing someone you're dating to your parents, but openly being in a relationship that you're introducing them to your friends, having a wedding, which means introducing them to family, and then celebrating your love publicly and openly and not in a sort of contained, quiet, hidden way. And so that was a big thing of mine. So I showed up to USC when I was 18, and I truly had never seen a gay couple or person in my life. I in India at the time. And so it was illegal to be gay. You could literally be put in prison for it. Gay marriage is still illegal in India. And so there was like just no examples. And I would always be suspicious of, I was like, I think maybe that person's gay. And then the minute I would hear a slur about them or someone call them something. And then I would immediately be like, well, I never want to be on the receiving end of that. And so it had only been sort of bad. And so I showed up to USC, and then on my first day, I saw a lesbian couple, and they were holding hands, and they were like dressed really cool, head to toe Urban Outfitters.
Naturally.
And they were, I'm not joking, I followed them around campus for 20 minutes because I was waiting to be like, who's going to throw the first stone, the first rock?
You were waiting for the hate crime.
Yes. I was like, this is not allowed. My internal hate was coming out. I was like, you can't do that. And
then, tell the truth. Did you throw the stone?
No. No, I did. I followed them for 20 minutes until I was like, this is so creepy. Like, what am I doing? And nothing happened to them. And they were just living their life and they were beautiful and they were like making out and no one cared. And I just remember my mind was blown at the idea of that.
Oh my God.
And, you know, not to bring it back to the OC, but the gay shows and gay characters at that time, other than Will and Grace, I will say, whenever there was a gay character on a show, it was a bad thing. Like on the OC, one of the kids' dads is gay and they catch him in the act and it's full of shame and all that stuff. So to just see basic people existing and happy and no one caring was such a big thing. And for an Icenium, I think what's so revolutionary about it, and people have, I've gotten so many messages more than any of many things I've done, is that it kind of normalizes that you can have a happy life. And not a normal life in the hetero way, but just a happy ending. And I think for a lot of people are bringing their parents to see the movie. Because I think what happens is my parents freaked out when I came out to them. But I think for them, the only example of gay was AIDS and like all of this bad stuff and loneliness and like dying alone and like not having a family or not having a wedding or whatever it is. And in a weird way, I think like we need to see more examples of it working out for people. So
well,
that
we are teaching them.
Exactly. And so I think like that part of it was interesting. And so then when I came out, I came out in school my first semester to like my peers and nothing bad happened, quote unquote. And then I thought, okay, at that point I was supposed to go back to India at the end of my 4 years at USC. So I had no plan to stay in America. So I thought, okay, I'll live a gay life for 4 years, really go hard. And then I'll go back to India and like probably like have an arrangement or whatever. I don't know. I just was like, there's no way I can live like this there at the time. And I went home for Christmas break. I remember my end of my first semester, and I'm very close to my mom. And the character in the movie is very closely based on a lot of the lines. When Rosh and I worked on the script, he was like, just say what your mom would say, because she very much is like watching queer movies and shows. And
yeah, the Out TV running joke is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, she would be watching Out TV. So she, we were really close, and on the multiple plane rides back, I was just like, just don't blurt these words out. You're home for 2 weeks. Like, just don't say it. Like, I kept being like, just, it's just 2 weeks. Just go back in, go back in. And then the first thing I said to her when I saw her, I felt so wrong lying to her because she had missed me a lot. And she was asking me how everything was going. And I just blurted it out. And she's a very happy person. And then she just became stone-faced. And she said, I'm going to go talk to your dad. And then she went to talk to my dad in their bedroom. And then they closed the door. And they were in there for most of the day. And then, you know, they were Googling and all sorts of stuff. And then my dad used to own his own business. So he went to work 7 days a week. And I had never seen him skip. He skipped work. So I knew that was really not good. And then that whole period, they were helping me pay for college. So they were like, you've been corrupted. You're not kind of going to go back there. And it was all sort of falling apart in this like very short amount of time. And they were sending me to a doctor, which I'm guessing was a conversion doctor. I never got there, thank God. But there was like a doctor who was supposed to see me. And then I don't know what in me just said, I want to go to a therapist. And therapy is still kind of stigmatized in India a little bit, where it's not, people aren't openly talking about it as much as they are in America. But back then, especially, it was like therapy, there's something really wrong. And so I don't know why I was just like, can I go to a therapist instead? And then they found some therapists. And honestly, this could have gone either way. This therapist could have told me that I'm, you know, something is wrong with me or something. But I went to this lady and I told her this whole story. And she was like, hold on, I don't need to be talking to you. I need to talk to your family. And I was like, oh, they're not going to come in here. And her therapist's office had a back entrance because people were ashamed to be seen coming in from the front because there was such a stigma. So she was like, oh, don't worry. I'm gonna call them and say I need to give your diagnosis in person tomorrow. And then I'll just basically talk to them and they come in there. And I was like, okay. And then she had them come in. And
I'm giving snaps.
Incredible. She had them come in and then she basically schooled them and said there was nothing wrong with me. She explained how lonely and scary, all these things I must have been. I was crying. They were crying. Everyone's crying. And then it ended. And then the last 5 minutes she focused on me. She had said nothing to me the entire hour. And then she said, and for you, she was like, it's taken you 5 years to say these words out loud. And you've thought about it almost every day since you were 14. And it took you this much time to say it. She's like, they've known you since you were a baby. They've projected onto you all these things about your future. And it's going to take them a second to adjust that. And so in that time, in the next 5 years, the same amount of time you gave yourself, you need to give them. So in the next 5 years, they're allowed to ask offensive questions and you can't get mad. You can tell them like why it's wrong and explain what's right. And then they are allowed to make mistakes and stumble, But she's like, at the end of the next 5 years, if they're still saying that stuff, then you can get mad. And then you can decide like how you want to do. And it was just something I had never, ever
thought about. Who the fuck is this therapist, Karen?
Who is she? And does she have a podcast? Because I could use her right now.
She needs to be doing international TED Talks.
I know.
Because that is such good advice.
Yeah, I mean, and it was something I really needed to hear because I don't know how it was for you, but in my perspective, I'm like, I've accepted this about myself. Why won't you accept it right away? And it took me a lot. I just not thought about it from their perspective. And then that's what I thought the movie did in a really great way, is it really humanizes the parents and it doesn't make them these sort of villains. And in a weird way, they have the best arc because the movie starts and you're like, oh, these bumbling characters in a rom-com, the kooky parents, and like, they're going to be whatever. And by the end of the movie, most people are like, I wish I had a love story like theirs, because they have this like deeper love, the parents, that like you don't really imagine and you're judging them sort of.
Well, it's the classic too, like the emotionless dad and then the overbearing mom, and to see the dad's relationship to his gay son change too. Because, you know, there's such a masculinity thing. I think that the dads of gay children are probably, you know, their journey is that, are they like, am I less of a man because my kid ended up this way, and they're not taught to have any emotions, period. And it's the whole fucking issue with straight men. You know, it's... we can talk for hours about the problems with straight men, but I think that to see a dad go on that journey to embrace his gay son is like, it's the same thing. My family did the fucking same thing. I have three straight brothers who asked me the most offensive, annoying questions when I first came out. And I think you're probably right that it did take those years of like my family figuring it out. And now if anything happens now, it does hit harder. Because I have stood up for myself for so long now. I mean, I told this story on, we do bonus episodes on Substack that are like more horny focus. And I told a story about how when I was recently in St. Louis a couple of years ago, I had an issue, a moment with my family that I really felt like not seen. Mm. And the way that I reacted, I felt like a teenager. And I went, but instead of being a teenager, I was like, I'm a grown ass man. And so what did I do? I drove to a gay bar. And then slutted it up for a second. Of course. Like, that's just like what I needed to do in that moment. But it really is hard, I think, as adults to have relationships with our families, especially if they're straight. And I think that also the movie does a great job of you and your sister's relationship, because I think adult relationships with siblings can be really, can go many different directions.
Yeah. And I used to have this jealousy with my sister when I was in the closet where I'm like, she has it so much easier. Mm. And the irony is that as a woman in certain cultures, it's probably way worse than being a gay man. And so I love that the movie had that too, which was that everyone's sort of fighting the stigma in the system that they're born with in whatever way. And that I also loved how in the script, the siblings were so mean to each other, because I feel like that's the reality. Like when she kind of torpedoes everything, you're just like, some people were like, is it too mean? And I'm like, no, we're the meanest to like them, like to each other. Like we're so...
The meanest you can be to anybody is your sibling.
Yeah. It's,
like you can't treat your partner that way. You can't treat your parent that way. But your sibling, baby, that's equal footing.
It's on. Yeah,
you've been in the trenches together.
Exactly.
There's. I do also love that the movie so much... focuses about the importance on weddings and cultural traditions. And our wedding was pretty Jewy, all things considered, especially when you think about Matt's family is fully Catholic, barely knew any Jews. What would you say, though, if we talk about weddings, what would you say is a wedding pet peeve that you have just as an adult now, since we're embarking on wedding season? Anything about weddings really get you going?
Something I don't like is if they're in a very remote location, like requiring multiple flights and things like that. I just feel like it's, unless they're paying and organizing all of that, I don't want to have to book the propeller plane to get to the island.
Like, no.
Yeah, I just, you got to make it easy for me.
What's the max amount of people that the destination couples should invite to their wedding?
Oh my God, I think it should be under 100. Well, my partner and I,
we
are not married, but we would want to get married in a courthouse. We don't want any of this. And it was interesting where people are like, maybe after shooting the wedding in the movie, you'll change your mind. It was the opposite. We were like, never. And he had to plan a fake wedding. But even then, we were shooting in Vancouver in the middle of the Indian wedding season. So we had a real Indian wedding planner because we're like, the set designer's like, well, I need to source these like materials, but then I would just go anyways to these places. So, but then we were competing with real weddings to do a fake wedding. And we kept losing venues to shoot the wedding in the movie because they were getting booked up. And then the craziest thing was we had to book, you know, we had to find a priest, an Indian priest, because, you know, in the script, you just type out and then the priest says the whatever. I've heard it a million times at weddings. It's in another language, in Sanskrit, so I don't know what they're saying. And then everyone on the movie working on it behind the scenes was mostly white. So they were like, what are we, what are the traditions? And so my partner and I are like, we need a wedding, like a specialist priest consultant. So this wedding planner basically was helping Roshan sort of find a priest. And we couldn't get a priest to agree to do the movie because of the subject matter, because it was two men. And she kept like, kind of would describe what it was, and they were like, no. And then eventually she was like, and there was a moment when we were making the movie too, where we were like, is this movie too old fashioned? Like, are we over this? Cause Gen Z, everyone's gay, everything's fine. And we were like, no, this is still like an issue, I feel. And like, there's something especially when you're trying to merge cultures, and there's this feeling. And I love the sequence in the movie where the parents are like, we thought you would want a gay wedding, which in their mind is like, you know, just their friend marries them and there's no like official stuff involved. Exactly. Yeah. But there still seems to be that trigger about like, doing something new in an old tradition, like making
Your own. It's the idea of religion. I think the role that religion plays in a gay person's life is fraught with tension because most of these religions have told us that we don't belong or that we're not allowed to be ourselves. It's so interesting. I mean, your partner actually has an amazing quote when talking about filming the wedding sequence. He said, when we shot the Indian wedding at the end between two men and all the extras we brought into that tent were random uncles and aunties from around British Columbia, they had not been briefed on what they were about to witness. To me, they represented both literally and figuratively the people I am most afraid of coming out to. After we gathered them in the tent, we asked them, once they saw the two men walking in, to stand up and throw petals. And I thought, what's going to happen? I kept watching their faces as the wedding played out. And when I gave the signal for everyone to stand up and throw the flower petals, they did. And they weren't just going through the motions. They threw them with genuine happiness and joy in their faces. And in that moment, I felt truly accepted.
I mean, it's
such
good.
A beautiful quote. I mean, your partner, Roshan, having directed this movie and, you know, the fact that you both brought so much of yourselves to the piece, it's so evident because I think that feeling accepted by our families is such a universal feeling. And it's so hard, I think, to be a queer person embracing your like loud and proud queer life while still answering to your deep need to feel connected to your family. Every time I do mushrooms, I weep, and it's always about my family.
Of course.
So it really strikes me, girl.
Yeah. Of course. It made even Jonathan emotional doing that scene because he hasn't been married himself, but he's famously officiated, I think, dozens of weddings.
I can only imagine.
He's the one. I think as soon as we finished filming, he was going to go off to officiate some wedding. He loves a wedding. And I think even seeing that whole thing, it brought up all these emotions in him because, you know, he hasn't gone through it and all of that stuff. And there is that weird thing, we become like little kids again because we're just, you know, it's that base thing. And I think in Indian culture, you go to hundreds of weddings, there's the wedding every week, and you've just gone to it so many times. And I love that the movie opened with my character watching someone else's wedding from the outside almost and being like, well, I'll never have this version of it or whatever. And then that is not a good feeling to grow up with, because always knowing that you can't have a certain thing is not good. And so then in a way, when we were filming it too, you know, no Bollywood movie has filmed like a same-sex couple getting married in a traditional ceremony. Real people have had them in America, like a Hindu wedding with two gay men. But each time it happens, it almost goes viral because it's still so rare. But we were like, oh, we'll capture this in film, like for the first time. And then that image will just exist. And then whoever it needs to reach, they can reach it if they do it. And if not, it is what it is. But
That really, it's so fucking special. It's a cheesy word, but that's special. I just, what really resonates with me with what you said also is that there's a period after you come out where you just sort of resign to the fact that you have to struggle, right? It's like you're like I relate it to so many parts of being gay. I also relate it to like sexual stuff in terms of like expressing yourself physically. I think that because we were told by our parents that it was always baked in the fear of HIV and being gay, you need to suffer. I really went through that phase when I first came out of like, sure, I'm allowed to like lift the spell of the secret, but I'm not now allowed to enjoy my life. And that's such a fucked up feeling. And that's why it takes a lot of us all these years to unlearn that. And if we can get an epilogue to your family, Sitch, did after those 5 years, did they start asking those questions?
Yeah, it was actually less than 5 years. It was, I think 7 months after that. I remember they both called me and they said, you know, we just never spoke about it again after that therapy incident. And then I went back to school and then I was, I think, a sophomore. And then they just called and they essentially said, you know, we've talked about it and we're fine. And then we just ended the conversation and we just never spoke about it again. And in a way I was like, great, I don't need to talk about this. Like, it was like a bomb going off. So I was like, I'm just going to stay away from this thing. As long as they know, then I feel fine. And then a few years went by and then my mom very gently was like, so are you dating anyone? And then I just panicked and I was like, oh my God. And then I was like, no. And then we just never spoke about it. Then eventually also Hollywood fucked me up, to be honest, because then as I was getting more comfortable in my skin, I started going out and auditioning when I was like 22, 23. And I think when I was like maybe 24 or something, someone said to me, and I think they were trying to be like nice about it, but they said, oh, you have 2 strikes against you. And I was like, what do you mean? And they were like, well, you're Indian and you're gay. You can't have 2. You can only have 1. Like, you can't have like 2 sort of things. And I just remember being like, oh, and it just kind of stuck in there. And I was like, oh no. Oof. And I was like, well, I can't change how my skin looks. So I guess I should suppress this other part, which I did. And then I once had an audition and I was like very far along on this thing. And this casting director came to me outside in the waiting room and he was like, hey, they love you for this. Like, this was the final round or something. But he was like, you know, just don't use your hands so much. And it was just like a little thing. And I just was like, my hands, right? I can't. And so what was really, so that became a whole other thing where I would sort of like be dating or seeing people, but never shared them with my family. Cause I was like, I don't want to open this door again. In my head, I was like, we're all at peace. You guys know, I just needed you to know. I don't need you in my life to like talk about it or tell people my dating life, anything. And then around when I was 29, I had been working enough where I had less of the fear, the Hollywood fear. And then my parents had just started asking the question more and more that I was like, I think I'm ready to like properly date someone and then maybe even introduce someone to them and like kind of be dating in the open. And so I did what anyone in LA does. I joined Raya. And then
she did. And then what? You went on a date with
I went on a date with
Chris
10
Colfer.
People. Yes, exactly. Well, I remember opening Raya and the first person I saw was Gerard Carmichael and he hadn't come out yet. It was 2018. And I remember being like, am I supposed to know this?
Exclusive by Raya.
He was so straight presenting and I was like, this can't be true. And then, he was on there. Ben Platt was on. There was like a few people on there.
Did you go on a date with Ben Platt?
I did not, but we did end up doing a movie together years later and we did a threesome in that movie. So in a way we did go on a date. And so then we I ended up going on a date with a bunch of people for like a year. None of it worked out. And then I met Roshan about a year into it. And then by the time I met him, he was like the perfect person to introduce because he went to Harvard Medical School. He went to Yale undergrad. He's a doctor at Harvard. He's a very successful television writer at the time. He had created this show called The Resident that went for 100 episodes. So like he did that and then he hadn't started directing it. And so it felt like, well, if I'm going to introduce anyone, this should be pretty
easy. They can't say nothing.
Exactly. And that's what happened. Indian parents love a doctor. They love a doctor. And then, so they, you know, they love.
Oh, Jews as well, baby. Yeah. That's another thing I clocked as a similarity watching this movie. Cause it's all like, they want the women to get pregnant.
Correct.
You know, it's so funny to me, that journey, but also the visual is devastating about the hands thing from your audition. Because why do straight men have no ability? They're not allowed to talk with their hands or like hit a consonant. Did you see the Cola Scola interview with Colbert where they were talking about how straight guys, what are you doing? Like they're not allowed to have any sort of
Can't finish a sentence, can't use punctuation.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, it's so true. It's like, God forbid we use a preposition, we conjugate a verb, and we have a single expression with the hand.
Roshan had a really funny thing where he had mostly dated women prior to me because he came out later in life when he was 30. And so he had been in relationships with women, and one of the things he would have to do to be masked was kill bugs for them because there would always be a spider and they'd be like, oh my God. And he'd be like, I got it. And he is deathly afraid of bugs. And now, you know, that he's gay, I kill them for him because in India, there's so many bugs, I can kill them in my hand. Like, I have no squeamishness about it. And he'll scream as if he's like Drew Barrymore and like scream literally.
I was going
to
say, that's gender affirming care. Yeah,
the most femme scream you've ever heard. And I'm like, is there a spider? He's like, yes. And I'll be like, I'll
and
be
his
right
wrists
there.
Are like this.
Yes, yes, yes. But all the years that he, you know, masked up and he killed those spiders and was dying on the inside.
He did the work and he said, the position has been filled by you.
Exactly.
And that's on Love is Love. And that's gay on gay love. Well, listen, I am so obsessed with these stories. I'm really impressed with your journey as not only as an actor, but as a creator. And I'm very grateful to you for being a part of A Nice Indian Boy. It was healing to watch. And I am just so excited by your career as well. Before I ask the final podcast question, for people listening, they also need to know that, yes, you are in Deadpool. Yes, you are also in Deadpool 2. Yes, you were in Deadpool vs. Wolverine. Yes, you voice acted in Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, Spider-Man Beyond the Spider-Verse. Yes, Nobody Wants This. Yes, you've worked a million times with Ryan Reynolds. It's just so delicious. And I just want to make sure they know that you
Thank
have
you.
Been putting the twerk
I think the gays
in.
Need to know, because what's funny is, to bring it fully back to Ryan O'Connell, my obsession, Ryan doesn't know any straight people, which I really appreciate. And so when he first met me, he was like, I don't know any of your work because you've only been in things with straight people. And he truly doesn't know the names of, you know, the other day he was at a restaurant and Tom Holland was there, speaking of Spider-Man. He did not know who that was. He was
what?
Like, some guy was having dinner with Zendaya and I was like, Ryan. And he just doesn't know. He doesn't know. And oftentimes I'll be with him and some person will bring up something that I was in and he'll be like, what are they talking about?
And I hope it's like the most like commercial big name thing.
He has no idea.
You know what? God bless Ryan for putting on the gay headphones. He doesn't register anything that's not about.
Register anything. Yeah.
Gay fucking. Well, speaking of gay things, I am going to ask you, Karin, the final podcast question, which is, if the world was ending, you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
Such a hard question. Because I consider myself a character actress.
I look up to all of them.
It's someone I worked with who is beloved in this genre. So I'm not just picking her randomly as an easy thing. It's because I've interacted with her in Atlanta for a few weeks on this movie. But the one and only Jennifer Coolidge, I love so much. We were not the best movie. And so it's this movie called Like a Boss. Amazing cast. Salma Hayek, Tiffany Haddish, Rose Byrne, myself, Natasha Rothwell, Billy Porter, and Miss Jennifer Coolidge. It's a very,
oh my
very
God,
cast.
Yes.
But she made me laugh more than, and it was interestingly before The White Lotus, because we shot in 2018 or 19. So it was before the pandemic, before she did White Lotus. And I found her to be just anything that uttered out of her mouth at any point, I was dying. And she would mess up her line sometimes. And it was 10 times funnier, whatever, because she was trying to find the words. And she would just be like, yes. Yeah. And I pride myself
put
on not being able to break.
On the put the table in the fuck.
Yes. And I am so happy she's getting her flowers now, because I don't know if I'm sharing too much, but prior to when we were filming that movie, she was talking a little bit about how she maybe wanted to retire because she felt like she had sort of done it all. And she talked a lot about how she wanted to be like a real actress and she got kind of put into these sort of parts, whatever. And lo and behold, Mike White Gay came to the rescue, and I am
as we
happy
always
for all
do.
Of us.
Thank yeah. you, Mike White, and it really also humanizes the devastation of an actor's life, which is that even Jennifer Coolidge is like, I think I did it all before White Lotus is like, and to see that deserved explosion of her career, and you had a front row fucking seat.
I know Mike was out here saving everyone because I was at a viewing party for season 3 of White Lotus for the premiere with a lot of straight people, almost all straight people. None of them knew who Parker Posey was. And I just remember being, they were like, this woman is really funny. And I was sitting there being like, this is horrifying.
See,
like,
and that's why it sometimes feels, that's the loneliness of an adult gay person, which is that you're in a room of straights who don't know Parker Posey. That is repeated violence from childhood. And we just have to deal with the fact that some people haven't seen Waiting for Guffman or Best in Show or any of her fucking genius films.
Yeah.
Well, damn. I cannot wait to read your memoir if you ever plan on writing one, because the stories are absolutely divoon. And I'm so glad you came on. That's a gay ass podcast.
Thank you for watching the movie and supporting and talking about it. It means a lot.
Oh my God, of course. I only give really genuine, feelings about. And I take, this is going to sound annoying, but it's the truth. I take very seriously who I interview on this podcast because it's my baby. And I really, want to curate people that their work speaks to me and their energy. And you are just someone that has done that. And this movie, I mean, it's like one of those things that I, like you said, I want to show everyone. I'm going to watch it over and over and just, I'm so happy that things like this are being made.
Thank you.
Will you tell the listeners where to follow you if you would like them to?
Yeah, on Instagram. It's the only one I have. It's Karin Soni for now. I might just leave it all because I'm, it's destroying my brain and the planet. But for now, I'm on the Instagram.
One day my dream is to be successful enough that I don't look at it and I pay someone buco bucks to just.
That's crazy. I was literally the other day just walking and I just had that fantasy. I was like, what if it's on an iPad, not on my phone?
There you go.
Someone does the posts for me. Like, when they send the copy and they were like, do this. And I was just like, someone just does it and I don't have to look at it. And
it'll happen. Dumb. It'll happen. And then, I probably will still have Twitter to watch porn, but that's another topic altogether. Karin, I'll see you gang up in Silver Lake. And next time we see each other, we'll chat about Parker Posey.
I love it.
Thanks for listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast. I am so in love with Karin Soni's stories and just crazy career. If you enjoy this episode, please leave a 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice or just drop a comment on YouTube if you're watching us there. Speaking of watching Gay Ass Podcast, I'm posting weekly bonus episodes where you can watch some of your favorite horny follows on the internet talk about their horny lives. That is at substack.com/Eric Wills, and this week is with Rainy Gay One, who has amassed like 70,000 Twitter follows. And if you watch the episode or go to his Twitter, you will see why. That is at substack.com/Eric Wills. And that's all I got for you. I'll see you next week for another gorgeous gay ass guest. Do me a favor, stay gay. Bye. You've been listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, hosted by me, Eric Williams. If you want to see and hear more, make sure you're subscribed to us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, or Patreon at Gay Ass Podcast. That's a Gay Ass Podcast is executive produced by Eric Williams and produced by Nathaniel McClure. We'll see you next week.
Did you know 38% of Ohio's teenagers have spent money on gambling in video and online games? Items like mystery boxes, skins, and spin to win mimic gambling, putting children at a higher risk of experiencing a gambling disorder as an adult. So get in the know about youth gambling and start the conversation with discussion guides, parent resources, and more at changethegameohio.org. That's changethegameohio.org.
Save big on your landscaping project at Menards. Blocks. We're your destination for concrete landscaping blocks. Whether you're installing a patio or adding a new retaining wall, we have the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Plus, get free estimates fast using our landscape design program in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on landscape blocks when you shop at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.